We present The Hideous Silence by Michael Robson, a play produced in our Durban studios by Don Ridgway for the Summer Radio Play Festival. Alan Rees is played by Roger Service, Alice Laker by Pamela Perry, and Gus Laker by Tim Sutcliffe. The play, except for one scene in Natal, takes place in the mountain country of northern India. The year is 1885. The Hideous Silence.
What's going on?
Why are we stopping?
There must be something on the track.
Oh, not another cow. I don't believe it.
You don't get cows on the line in mountain country, Mrs. Fairfax.
Then what? There's been no military activity in this part of northern India for years.
If you'll stand aside, I'll find out. You'd better stay with your wife, Captain.
What? Hey, all right.
We seem to be in trouble, gentlemen. May I help you?
We're sitting duck, sir. That landslide's headed straight for us.
If we reverse, though, it'll miss us, driver.
Not a hope, sir. It's too much of an incline.
Well, there's only one thing for it. We must try to get out of here. Come on, give me a hand up and I'll help you shovel coal.
We'll never make it, sir.
We'll certainly never make it if we don't try. Come on, gentlemen.
I dare say we are. Get the rest of the luggage onto the floor, Letty. We're in for a lively ride.
But where's Mr. Reese?
With the driver, I shouldn't wonder.
Is he a railwayman?
Does he look it? Does he sound it?
Why are you shouting at me?
Because we're driving into a landslide. Brace yourself. You're back against the seat. Your legs across and hard against the other seat. Well, bravo. I see nothing amusing about this mess.
I've often thought it before, Ned, but I've never dared say it. We should have done much better if you'd gone into the Navy like your father.
Alice, it's remarkable.
What is, Father?
What does that young man think he's doing with the village children?
He thinks he's turning them into devout little Christians. It's rather charming, really, to hear an evangelizing ditty in the lower Himalayas.
But Chael isn't Bishop Stortford. So why does he try to persuade those poor little children of Shiva that it is?
Well, Mr. Harding's paid to propagate the gospel, just as we're paid to run this hotel. Mr. Harding is fulfilling his obligations to Mother Church.
Alice, that curate is a prig and a bore. Still.
Time, Nekaji.
Burraped time, old friend.
Raja.
Why are you grinning like that?
He can't answer you. He has a mouthful of pan.
Oh, get along and hurry up about it.
Raja.
Hello. May I join you?
Yes, of course, Mrs. Bellew.
Thank you. The evening's so beautiful. So peaceful. It's much more peaceful than in Simla.
Chael is, of course, for the fastidious only.
Quite right. I'm only glad that Harry discovered it. And your charming hotel.
Is there any likelihood of your husband's joining you this summer?
I think not. Someone has to hold the fort in Calcutta. Once again, it's poor Harry's turn.
I can think of nothing more intolerable than Calcutta in June.
I can. Calcutta in August.
Oh, here's Seal. Mrs. Bailey, will you have a drink with us?
Oh, I don't think I shall, thank you.
Very cool. Very refreshing.
Well, all right, why not?
Why not indeed, Mrs. Bailey? Seal, a drink for the Memsahib. Gin and limes?
Lovely. Isn't it time your other guests arrived? Captain and Mrs. Fairfax and the other gentleman.
Oh, he's a Mr. Reese, and he's not a military man. I'm afraid that's all we know about him.
Do you think he plays at cards?
If he doesn't already, I'm confident that you'll soon instruct him.
You must confess there's little else to do in the evening.
There are, of course, complete editions of Scott, Dickens and Thackeray in the smoking room, should you feel so inclined.
Oh, I find it so difficult to read small print by lamplight.
Then you must hurry off to the oculist in Simla. They tell me he's very fashionable.
Mr. Laker, you are deplorable. But you shan't provoke me tonight, at least. Will that charming Mr. Ralphs be visiting you later in the season? I do hope so.
Mr. Ralphs is in Burma, we gather, doing something about King Thibault.
Oh, it's time they capture that dreadful creature.
You may be sure they will do very shortly, if Mr. Ralphs has any say in the matter.
He seemed a most capable gentleman.
And who better to judge his capabilities than you?
What can you mean, Mr. Laker?
That you're an excellent judge of men.
If I didn't know you better, I should take that remark amiss.
It's high time you stop provoking Mrs. Bailey, father. There's a limit to anyone's good nature.
My dear young lady, would I ever say anything offensive to you?
I'm an excellent judge of men.
Oh, well said. You deserve that, father. You are rather hard on Mrs. Bailey this evening, father. You will have to stop indulging yourself. She should take offense and go somewhere else. Our accounts will look rather sick.
Where else would she go? She can't afford Simla, not the life down there.
Well, that's hardly the point, is it? It's not her fault she's here on her own. Can't be much fun for her, really. Pretty girl, used to lots of attention.
Her husband has to sweat the summer out in Calcutta. The least she can do is to restrain herself from chasing everything in breeches the moment she arrives here.
Oh, you always overstate your case. She's frivolous, perhaps, and likes to flirt. But where's the harm in that?
And you aren't frivolous. You don't flirt. Sometimes I wonder why you don't. At least you're single.
I see you want to marry me off to the next bachelor to arrive here. The unfortunate Mr. Reese, perhaps?
I seem to recall that we've had this conversation before.
Every year since 1871. This is now the 14th time you've tried to urge me into matrimony.
And it's 14 years since Richard died. He would hardly have expected such a long period of mourning.
Why must you assume that I'm frantic for wedlock? Is it the only desirable state of life?
Alice, I'm over 60, and the chances are that I shan't see 70. I don't want what remains of my life to be soured by worrying about what you'll do when I'm dead.
Is my competence in question?
Of course not.
Well, then.
This place may be all very agreeable in the summer, when there are guests to liven it up. But it's bleak enough in winter and early spring. Lonely. It's the loneliness I worry about, on your account.
I'm a great deal happier here than I should be in some dreary cantonment in the plains, with nothing to do but listen to endless gossip from the officers' wives. Can you imagine how I should fare with 20 Flora Bellews for company?
But who would you have here? Seal and the servants, and an occasional visit from George Kitson? Not enough for an intelligent woman.
Isn't the intelligent woman able to make up her own mind about that?
Will you have a drink with me?
No, thank you.
Well, don't look so prim. Only my fourth this evening.
I'm sorry, I'm not the son you should have had. You wouldn't be fretting about me, and we should be able to get drunk together when conversation ran low.
I'm not sorry, and you know it. Ah, do you hear that?
A tonga.
Must be the Fairfaxes. Seal! Chandra, get out there with the lamp. Our guests have arrived.
I tell you, we've had more excitement on that blessed railway than I saw in 2 years on the Chitral border. You should have seen that landslide. Heaven knows how long it'll be before they clear and repair the line. And I can assure you that if it hadn't been for Reese here, we should be under the rocks even now.
Mm-hmm. That's something of an exaggeration.
I promise you it isn't. Letty will bear me out.
Oh, he's right, Mr. Laker. Mr. Reese saved our lives.
Well, this calls for a celebration.
Oh, there's a couple of bottles of champagne in my hamper. Though I doubt if they'll be drinkable yet after the shaking they've had in the past 10 hours.
I think we can run to something amusing in the house.
If you'll forgive me, ladies and gentlemen, I'll be turning in now.
Oh, but you've promised
yourself. Oh, come on, Mr. Reese. It isn't every night we have the chance to celebrate on this scale.
If any intervention can be said to have saved the train, then it was God's, not mine. I'll give you good night.
But look here, Reese.
There's a rum chap for you.
Extraordinary. That fellow carries diffidence to the point of obsession.
If he's done everything you suggest, Captain Fairfax, then I don't wonder he's all in now.
Well, yes, but hang it all.
He's gone, Ned, so it's no use protesting.
Well, I think we're all capable of drinking his health, nevertheless.
Do tell us exactly what happened. What did Mr. Reese do?
Well, the train suddenly
stopped. Well, we were pottering along.
Oh, I'm sorry, my dear.
Oh, no, Ned, no. I'm sure you'll tell it much better than I can.
Oh, nonsense. You're the raconteurs of the family.
We are on edge.
What? Oh, yes. Well, then, we were about 5 miles south of the railhead at Colco when the landslide began.
That's right.
The driver, Johnny, clapped on the brakes, and there we were. Absolute sitting ducks, just waiting to be crushed to death. Couldn't go backwards because the incline was too steep. Couldn't go forward because the chaps in the cabin were in a blue funk. Nightmare situation.
Nightmare situation. But Mr. Reese ran up the line and made the driver and the fireman move on. He was actually shoveling coals himself for 2 miles until we'd left the landslide well behind.
Well, bully for him.
I tell you, he was black as your hat by the time we reached Colca. Passengers all wanted to give him a vote of thanks. But the chap simply disappeared into the market. Extraordinary form. By the time the first Tongas arrived to take us to Simla, he was back again. Spruced up and tight-lipped as ever.
Tight-lipped as ever. He didn't want to discuss it at all.
He's clearly a very modest man.
All he would say was, that fool of a driver should be in a tin chapel, not a railway cabin.
Railway cabin, it's true. I always thought taciturn was a word you find only in books. Until we met Mr. Reese.
Who's that?
Reese.
Good Lord. Sorry to snap like that. I thought it might be a prowler.
I startled you?
Quite all right. I say, are you warm enough on the veranda?
Yes, perfectly, thank you. Amazing what you can see of the Himalayas from here, even at night.
One of the compensations of living at the back of beyond.
The others asleep?
Retired, at any rate.
Hmm.
Sorry you weren't up to the jollifications. The Fairfaxes were singing your praises for hours. Sure they meant well.
Yes, they would.
Of colour, were you?
I'm not a convivial man.
Well, takes all sorts.
What they fail to recognise, that admirable couple, is that what I did for myself, in the first instance. When the landslide occurred, I had no wish to be crushed to death because of the boundless incompetence of a Welsh driver.
That's not quite as they see it.
You'll forgive me, perhaps, if I tell you that young Fairfax and his kind are about as capable of judging human motives as I am of climbing Mount Everest. And I'd rather not discuss it, if you please. Would you have a lucifer match about you? My pipe's gone out.
Yes, of course.
Oh, thank you.
First time in northern India, is it?
First time north of Cawnpore.
And what made you choose this place?
I beg your pardon?
What made you choose Chell, rather than Simla or Darjeeling?
I heard it was quieter here. Fewer Englishmen and their mem-sahibs. Down at Heel, Subaltern was singing your praises in a club in Bombay, matter of fact. I noted the address and wrote to you.
But you're not in the army yourself.
I'm not a military man.
Travel much, do you?
When I can.
India's the only place I know. I was born out here, in the case of Coromandel. My father and grandfather were with John Company.
You're better off here. I should keep out of Europe. It's decaying fast.
Oh, you're not including England.
I'm referring to the continent.
Ah.
I spent some time there. France, the Palatinate, Prussia. It's unquiet, infected.
Your home's in England?
My home is wherever I happen to be. West Indies, Honduras, Ceylon, Europe. I was educated in France.
But you are English.
What the devil does it matter what I am? At present, I'm a guest at your hotel.
Forgive me. I had no business badgering you when you're obviously tired.
No, forgive me. I had no business behaving like a lout.
It's simply that my daughter and I see so few new faces that we tend, or I tend, to get a little carried away. In the summer, I live to an extent vicariously on the experiences of our guests.
My dear Laker, it's not something I should advise in my particular case, I can assure you.
Yes?
Tell me, how much would a man need to live on in a place like this?
Why, well, that would depend entirely upon the man's inclinations and appetites.
That's a caveat I like.
And a significant one, surely.
As to that, a few ounces of negro head a week, acceptable meals, the occasional whiskey, place of my own. My tastes are humdrum enough. They don't run to the carnal.
Well, in sterling terms, you could probably have a bungalow built for £70 or £80. Thereafter, if you're as temperate as you suggest, you could job along very handsomely with sufficient servants on £150 a year. Unless you intended to socialize.
Heaven forbid.
Thinking of settling in these parts?
I'll know when I've had an opportunity of looking around.
You'll live longer here than you would on the plains.
Longevity isn't the prime consideration.
You're a singular man.
I seek, ultimately, isolation. But an isolation of my own choosing.
Ah, bacon, eggs, fried bread and coffee. Really sets a chap up for the day. Seal, you old villain. You're a perfect marvel.
Gotcha.
What's the bally weather going to be like, eh? Cool enough for a picnic?
Oh, what perfect for picnicking, sir.
You hear that, ladies? What did I tell you?
But are you fully recovered from your journey?
Oh, never felt better. Good night's sleep, mountain air, fit as a fiddle. Will you all join us, Mrs. Billew?
Well, I should love to, of course, but...
Well, we'll get Reese to make up the foursome. Where is he, anyway?
Cypress has been walking since sunrise.
Walking? Fellow's a glutton for punishment. Is he back?
Oh, look! There he is. Down by the deodars. Smoking.
You make that sound very sinister.
What? Sinister? Oh, no. I was surprised to see him smoking a pipe, that's all.
I think it suits him. And I shall go and tell him so. Good morning, Mr. Reese. Up and about early?
Morning, ma'am.
What are you looking at so keenly?
I was watching that pair of elephants. Do you see them there in the forest?
Oh, good heavens, yes. Do you suppose they're wild?
With two young fellows sitting on their necks, I should scarcely imagine so.
Oh, dear. Are they really two mahouts? I'm afraid I can't see as clearly as you can.
But there they are, plain to be seen, not 100 yards off.
I have a... something of an astigmatism, Mr. Reese.
Then don't you possess a pair of spectacles?
No lady looks her best wearing spectacles.
No lady with an astigmatism can see her best without them.
You're very formidable, aren't you? Very logical. You must learn to make allowances for a woman's vanity. Captain and Mrs. Fairfax are proposing a picnic today. They're hoping you'll join us.
Picnic?
Picnic. Yes. Surely to goodness you know what a picnic is, Mr. Reese.
I'm sorry, the notion doesn't appeal to me.
No, but why? It's a beautiful day. A shame to waste it.
Is any alternative to a picnic the waste of a day?
Oh, how difficult men are. You know what I mean.
I came to the mountains for peace, Mrs. Bellew, not picnics.
Then you won't come.
Haven't I made myself sufficiently clear?
But there's so much more fun with a foursome. Do say you'll come.
Strange though it may appear to you, I have no desire to spend my first full day here in the way you suggest.
I say, he's ticking her off. He's reading the Jolly Old Riot Act.
Riot Act? Oh, dear. Oh, I do believe our gay charmer is retiring in tears.
You're right, you know. Mrs. Bellew!
Leaving the field of battle, handkerchief to her eyes.
Oh, look here. We can't have this sort of thing.
Oh, where are you going? Ned!
Mrs. Bellew in tears, is she?
I've no idea.
She certainly appeared to be.
She won't take no for an answer.
Invited you to the picnic, I suppose.
An invitation I refused.
Must have been pretty short about it to discompose her like that. Well, she's a chatterbox, of course, but she's good-hearted enough.
She's a stupid and insensitive young woman.
I say, that's coming in a bit strong.
In addition, she's petulant and conceited, and above all, she cannot stop talking.
Oh, yes, but was there any need to...
I'm going inside. I have some letters to write.
I see.
What luck, Ned.
What? Extraordinary sort of morning this has turned out to be. People flying off the handle in all directions.
All directions. Well, then, a picnic for two or for three?
Three. Mrs. Bellew will soon be herself again. Mm. I was pretty sharp with Reese just now. A few home truths, and he soon cleared off.
Now, Ned, we're here for a holiday, and I don't want it spoilt with a lot of silly and unnecessary quarrelling.
Who said anything about quarrelling? I was merely setting the matter to rights.
And I hope so, I really do. Mr. Reese is a highly strong gentleman, and a little of your boisterousness will go a long way with him. He's not one of your noisy subalterns, you know.
If he were, we'd be having an altogether jollier time of it, I dare say.
How's it coming along, Ellis? Everything under control?
I think so. I shall have to leave with the hampers in half an hour or so.
Have they all gone picnicking?
All but Mr. Reese. He went down into the village for a stroll. But I think he's reading on the lawn now.
Solitary cove, isn't he?
He seems to me to be a very private man.
Yes. Well, I hope he won't find the younger element here too lively for his tastes.
Oh, I shouldn't worry too much on that account. He knew it was a small hotel when he first wrote to us. Can't have expected it to be entirely empty.
Suppose not.
Why do you say that so dolefully?
Oh, I don't know. I believe he'd like to open up a little. But there's something constraining him. I tell you what. Why not ask him to drive you to the picnic site with the hampers?
Do you think that's wise?
I think it's worth a try. He's going to be thrown together with the others for at least a month, so he might as well get used to their company. If he doesn't want to stay on there, he can always come back on his own.
Hello?
Ah, Miss Laker. What have you got there?
Fresh lemon juice. It's very hot already.
Very kind. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Good. Very good.
Seal and Chandra have soft drink making to a fine art now.
I should say so. What a view. What a magnificent view you have from here. It's also harmonious.
It's what persuades us to stay on year after year.
I can see that. Look here, why don't you sit down? Join me.
For a short time. Thank you.
That's it. Do you mind if I smoke this thing?
Oh, please do. There's something very nostalgic about the smell of tobacco smoke up here.
Nostalgic? For what?
I don't know, really. England, I suppose. Saxon church. The village green. Cricket in the afternoon. And old gentlemen puffing their pipes under the trees.
Have you visited England, then? I gather that your father has never left India.
Neither have I. No. No, my vision of England is entirely based on light reading and the comments of the guests we have here. It's a composite of other people's memories and my own imagination.
Well, it's not entirely inaccurate. My father was a vicar in Devon, and his living embraced very much the kind of community you were describing.
You're going back, aren't you? Sooner or later?
I don't know. I don't know at all.
Well, have you no family that you miss?
Travellers, habitual exiles, have no business with families they can never visit. It's an extreme form of selfishness.
But what about sailors and the military?
The profession of arms isn't something I can discuss with any degree of impartiality. I'd much sooner talk about Chael and the life here.
Ah, then we can kill two birds with one stone.
How so?
Well, I have to take the hampers up to the picnic. If you care to drive the tonga for me, I'll tell you everything you want to know about Chael.
Is that an ultimatum?
If you say so, Mr. Reese.
In the garden, you were talking of families. May I ask why you never married?
Why, Mr. Rees, is this an entirely proper conversation for our first journey together?
I can't imagine why I asked you. It must be the altitude. But there it is, I have asked. And I expect nothing but what you would properly wish to say.
It's a longish story, but not, I suppose, an uncommon one in India. I became engaged in 1870 to a lieutenant in the Assam Light Infantry, the 42nd. Richard, like me, was born in India, and soldiering was in his blood. He took part the following year in a punitive expedition against the Lushai. You've probably never heard of them.
I can't say I have. But if this is painful for you, I'd rather you didn't continue.
It all happened such a long time ago, I'm capable of talking about it without embarrassing either of us. The Lushai Hills are in Manipur, close to the Burmese border. The expeditionary force went into the hills following a series of unpleasant outrages. Shortly after Christmas Day, Richard led a small force to recover a number of commissariat elephants that had been captured by the Lushai. No one returned. On New Year's Eve, a column went into the jungle to look for them. They were discovered, mutilated and scalped. Richard was 25. It was his first command.
I'm sorry.
Colonel made some agreeable noises about Richard's gallant and honorable death in the field. I found it difficult to forgive his noble lies. Richard had clearly died slowly and in great pain. Thereafter, I made up my mind to have nothing more to do with the officers of the Raj. They die too young and too frequently for reasons quite beyond my comprehension.
Do you think they'll be long, Ned? I'm very thirsty.
There's always the beer. Should be quite cold by now. It's been in the stream for a couple of hours.
I don't care for beer, darling, as you very well know. Neither, I'm sure, does Mrs. Bellew.
Alice promised us wine, didn't she?
I believe so. All the way from Pondicherry. Trust the French to look after themselves if we don't.
Oh, it really is very hot, even in the shade.
I say, what about that?
Who is it? I can't see as far as that.
Why, it's Alice Laker, driven by Mr. Rees.
Extraordinary. She's somehow succeeded with him where the rest of us have failed.
Laker, where the devil are you?
Hello. What are you doing in jail, Kitson?
Getting away from Simla, principally.
Well, sit down. Drink?
No, thanks. Had too much at luncheon. Got a splitting headache and I'm feeling liverish.
Physician, heal thyself.
This is something quinine won't cure. I shall have to try abstemiousness.
Oh, but this is very serious.
Where are your guests, anyway? Are they all arrived now?
Oh, yes, and they're picnicking. Alice is with them. They'll be back shortly, I imagine. They want to be home by sundown.
Yeah. Oh, pity Alice ain't here. I wanted to have a word with her.
I don't think it's any use.
What?
I don't think it's any use persisting with Alice. She seems to have no interest in marriage whatsoever.
What's the matter with the girl? Damn it all, it's not as if I wanted to carry her off 1,000 miles away. The change would be a moderate one.
That's not the way she appears to see it.
She's discussed me with you?
No, not you. Just marriage, generally.
I can't make her out. Not at all.
She's had a great many proposals, some facetious, some serious, from all kinds and conditions of men over the past 10 years or so. You're not alone in failing to make her out.
But she isn't getting any younger. Most women of her age have 3 or 4 children. That's what she needs.
How can you be sure what she needs or wants? I certainly can't. And I've known her all her life.
But you can make her see reason. She respects your judgment.
As far as Alice is concerned, reason doesn't enter into the scheme of things. She's looking for love, I've no doubt, but she's also looking for someone to love. And evidently she hasn't found him yet.
But when a woman's over 30, to talk of love is a little disingenuous, surely. Marriage becomes a partnership based on respect, a hope for companionship.
You make it sound like a building contract. Alice doesn't have your Bernoysic attitude towards marriage. And after all, why should she?
Is it wrong to be practical? Do you disagree with me?
In principle, no. In practice, yes. You don't love her, but she would be useful to you. She's an excellent housekeeper, an accomplished hostess, and strong men don't, in fact, turn ashen when they see her face. All useful notches on the social totem. But Alice wants a sweetheart, not a tallyman.
Trouble with you, Laker, is I never know whether you're being serious or not.
I'm never certain myself most of the time. But I'm very serious in the matter of Alice's happiness. I believe she's a girl in a million, and I trust her to arrive at her own decision in a matter as important as this.
Time to go. Sun's below the yardarm, and it's time to go.
Oh, you're so noisy, Ned. Oh, I was having such a nice doze.
Aha, the shadows are lengthening, and the mosquitoes will be on us in swarms any minute.
Oh, how horrid.
Come on, come on, come on, come on. Plenty more days for plenty more picnics. The horse, Peterkin.
Oh, is he always as revoltingly hearty as this, Mrs. Fairfax?
Always. Except when he's asleep.
I suppose we should get back before nightfall. The track's not too good, even in the best of the day. Would you bring the hampers, Mr. Rees?
Yes, of course.
Tell you what, Rees, I don't mind betting I can get back home in shorter order than you can. How about a bit of a race?
Oh, don't be so childish, Ned.
Oh, yes, do let's have a race.
I'm not at all sure it's a good idea.
Army versus all comers. How about it?
You may be a very good driver, Captain, but these are young ponies. I don't want one breaking a leg.
Ah, you worry too much, little miss. Do the beasts good to extend them a bit. Now, who's coming with me?
I do hope Ned Fairfax isn't going all out all of the way. There are some awkward bends further on.
Like most of his kind, Fairfax is long on bravura, but short on common sense. Your average officer suffers from a complete want of imagination. In action, this can be a positive advantage, but behind the lines, it produces some deplorable effects.
For a civilian, you seem to know the military very well.
I've seen them at first hand. I served with a neutral ambulance unit during the Franco-Prussian War.
Oh, what a hideous experience. What made you do that? Mr. Rees?
I suppose I was anxious to observe human folly on the grand scale. I don't imagine the world will see another sedan in my lifetime.
I'm sure your motives were more generous than that.
You mustn't judge the rest of the world by your standards. I'd say you were incapable of selfishness. But virtually everything in my life has been shaped by expediency, and nothing nobler than that.
I wonder what your wife would say to that.
My wife? What makes you suppose I have a wife?
Mrs. Bellew, ahead of us.
Oh, there. Looks as if she's taken a tumble.
But alone? What's happened to their tonga?
Perfectly ridiculous. When he's in better shape, I shall give him a good dressing down. Might have broken all their necks.
I did warn him before they set off for home.
He's going to have to pay for a new axle tree.
Oh, can't it be mended?
Possible. There's a split right through it. Have to be replaced. Ah, oh, hello, Rees. How is the young lunatic?
It was a clean break, fortunately. Now his leg's in splints, he'll be all right. But it's going to be painful for a while.
He's lucky to have had someone with medical knowledge to look after him. I'm very grateful for all you've done. Maddening thing is that Kitson left only half an hour before you all arrived back. In the event, I don't think he could have made a better job of Fairfax's leg than you have.
Kitson?
He has a practice in Simla. He comes up to see us quite frequently.
To see you quite frequently?
What sort of age would he be?
Oh, 45, I dare say.
He's 48. Why? Do you know him, Mr. Rees?
No. Man I'm thinking of would be much older than that.
I beg your pardon. Do help yourself to whiskey. Clean forgot to offer you some earlier.
I'd like a drink now, thank you. Is this locally distilled?
Yes, not half bad, is it?
It's excellent.
Do you by any chance play backgammon?
I have done, why?
I was hoping we might have a game or two. Run through all the available opposition many times over.
Some other time, perhaps. When I finish my drink, I shall take a turn round the village.
You like your exercise?
I like Indian villages at night. It's the only time they're ever tranquil. I shall take Pan.
You take Pan?
Certainly. There's nothing better for the temper or the digestion.
But your teeth aren't stained.
You have to chew arnica seeds and cardamom habitually before your teeth will discolour. I seldom take more than one Pan a day. Until you've taken Pan with an Indian, you've neglected one of his most important social offerings. In English terms, it's like going to someone's home for tea and refusing to drink their tea because it's a filthy habit.
Dear me, I didn't realize the social significance of Pan. I've always thought of it as faintly degenerate.
Forgive me, but you probably haven't thought about it at all. Wherever the Raj extends, the British merely follow British precedent. Tact and imagination remain words in a child's primer. I'll give you a good evening.
Unbelievably touchy chap he is. And all that rot about Pan. What does he think he's trying to prove?
He's an awkward man in many ways. Very bitter sometimes. But I think the awkwardness arises from his need to speak his mind at all times, regardless of people or circumstances.
Yet he was civil enough with Fairfax. A family doctor couldn't have been more considerate at 5 guineas a visit.
I'm sure he wants to like people, but he's constantly on his guard against them.
But what does he do, Alice? Has me foxed completely. Doesn't have the manner of someone with private means, and yet he's a gentleman. Very odd. Very odd indeed.
He has the bearing of a soldier, and the reactions of a soldier in emergency. Yet he evidently detests the military. He made that very clear this afternoon on our way back from the picnic.
There's something he's keeping dark. I don't know what it is or why. You see, he doesn't make any of the right noises.
What on earth do you mean?
Look here, most men, when they find themselves in strange surroundings, make clearly defined opening gambits. Within 10 minutes, they let it be known where they fit socially, where they come from, what they do, and whom they know. And in turn, they receive similar information from the others. It's all far more stylized than you'd at first imagine, but it serves a very useful social purpose, and we all do it. Not so with friend Rhys. He seems determined to obscure everything but the fact of his presence here. Like a fox trying to run with a pack of otter hounds. Very rum. Exceedingly rum.
You know, I think I have rather a clever old father.
It's taken you long enough to acknowledge that.
But there are two things about Mr. Rhys that he can't conceal, try as he might. He's very lonely, and he's very unhappy.
That guest of yours did a splendid job on Fairfax's leg. I should like to meet him.
Oh, he should be back fairly soon. He's been botanizing in the mountains all day.
I've never known such a man for exercise. He's never still. He was often away at daybreak, long before we could thank him for being so marvelous yesterday.
You say this Rhys was in the Franco-Prussian scrap. He must have seen some horrors there.
I don't believe he'd be willing to talk about it. He's a very reticent gentleman.
Oh, well, we must put a stop to that. There's a dozen families in Simla would like to meet him, I'll be bound. Oh, we might even get him an introduction to the Viceroy. He sounds the right sort.
I don't think our Mr. Rhys is much of a socializer, Dr. Kitson.
You make him sound a thoroughly morose beggar. What does he do?
Oh, we're all dying to find out. He's very mysterious.
Rhys, his name is. Is he Welsh?
I believe he comes from Devon. His father was a vicar there.
How in the world did you discover that?
In conversation. How else?
Oh, look, would that be him now? You know what my vision is like.
But he's leading the pony. And in this heat.
Oh, I expect Tommy cast a shoe.
Chandra, go and take Tommy from Rhys Bahadur.
Rhys Bahadur, indeed. Very honorific, aren't we?
Hello, Mr. Rhys. Have you had problems with the pony?
I think he's pulled a muscle. He's been limping it for a while.
Oh, come inside and have a drink. You must be exhausted.
I'll wash and change first, thank you.
Oh, do come and meet Dr. Kitson. He's full of praise for your medical skill.
Kitson?
How do you do, my dear fellow? And congratulations.
Dr. Kitson, Mr. Rhys.
How do you do, sir?
If my assistants could handle broken limbs just half as well as you do, I'd be a much happier man.
Good of you to say so.
Look here. Have we met somewhere before, you and I?
I think not.
Oddly enough, Mr. Reese does know a Dr. Kitson, but obviously not you, George.
Extraordinary coincidence. Where'd you meet him?
Honduras. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'll clean up a little.
Oh, but you're coming back. We must have a drink together.
Not before dinner. I have some correspondence to attend to.
Oh, I say. Reese.
Yes?
Were you ever in South Africa?
No.
You see? You see what we mean? Mr. Reese is not a man for idle conversation.
Not a man for any sort of conversation, seemingly. But I'm certain I've seen him before. Peter Maritzburg, perhaps. Or Robinson's Drift. In Natal, certainly.
But you can't have done. He's just told us he's never been in South Africa.
Alice, I never forget a face. Names, yes. In and out like water through a colander. But faces, no.
Anyway, it's quite unimportant, and I suggest we all stop guessing.
I'll remember sooner or later. In any event, I'd like to have a word with you, if you'll excuse us, Mrs. Bellew.
Oh, yes.
Take a turn round the garden with me, Alice.
If you wish. Forgive us, Mrs. Bellew?
Oh, why, of course. I'll call in on Mrs. Fairfax. I dare say she'd like some company now.
What a good idea. Come along, my dear. I waited for you yesterday as long as I could, but I had to leave before you returned. An appointment in Simla.
Oh, yes.
I've been beating about the bush for weeks now. Trying to pluck up the old courage, what? Anyway, here we are, and... Alice.
Yes, George, I'm all attention.
Oh, dash it all. You're just like your father. Always have the feeling you aren't taking a chap seriously.
I'll try, I promise.
You know, we get along pretty well together, you and I. And we're not adolescents any longer. We know how the world wags. And, well, I've been weighing up the situation for quite some time now. And,
You've decided to make a proposal of marriage.
Right. What?
I didn't mean to steal your thunder, George, but if I hadn't said it for you, I believe we should have been walking round and round the garden until we were both quite giddy.
Oh, yes. Well, it's a relief to have it off my mind, of course, and I shan't deny it.
May we sit down now?
Oh, of course. There you are. Taken you by surprise, have I? Hope you're not offended.
I don't think any woman could be offended by an honourable proposal of marriage. George, if I appear to be searching for words, it's because that's exactly what I am doing.
Are yes and no so frightfully difficult to find?
Let me ask you something.
Oh, well, of course, my dear. Ask away.
Are you in love with me? Clearly you aren't. Do you love me? And that's rather a different question.
I'm devoted to you. You must know that, surely.
My pony's also devoted to me. So is Seal. In his unguarded moments, even my father might express some such sentiment.
Oh, you're too clever by half, Alice. I'm a straightforward sort of chap, and I want you to marry me. I hope, I believe that you're fond of me. I'm sure we should be happy.
I'm happy now, living as I am.
Look, I'm sorry I didn't dress the whole thing up a little more romantically. A woman's a right to expect something more memorable than a middle-aged doctor's bumblings. But there it is. I am middle-aged, and forgive me, Alice, but you're no longer a girl with her hair just up. At our time of life, we have to face these facts.
Then let us by all means face them. You're a man with a man's natural needs and inclinations. Were I to become your wife, you would expect the marriage to be consummated, would you not?
Good God.
These are the facts, my dear. You asked us to face them. For my part, I could not submit to the embrace unless I loved my husband and he loved me. There. Now, It's time to go inside. I must talk to Seal about dinner.
Alice, there's someone else. Is it Rhys?
There's no one. No one at all.
Himself go tonight, isn't it?
I can see we shall have to keep him permanently drunk.
Well done, Reese. Another drink.
You know, I think I shall. Thank you.
And you, Dr. Kitson, it's your turn now to entertain us, I think.
Oh, yes, come along, George. We've all done our best, so what about a song from you?
Oh, you must be mad. I'm completely tone deaf.
Oh, shame. You shan't wriggle out of it as easy as that.
My dear, I swear that if I attempted to sing, the entire room would clear on the instant.
But you must have something up your sleeve. Spot of conjuring, perhaps.
Conjuring, perhaps. Or a recitation.
Yes, a monologue. Altogether your style, I should have thought, George.
Oh, a lot of persistent beggars, aren't you?
Yes.
Oh, very well. I shall have to dredge through my memories a moment.
Then we shall sit down and watch you dredge. Yes.
What about, you know we French stormed Ratisbon? Oh,
an Austrian army, awfully arrayed.
Prospero's farewell to the Magic Isle.
I'll give a chap a bit of hush. All right, I've got it.
Oh, lovely.
I hope I can remember the blessed thing.
Oh, we shall help George should you stumble by the wayside.
All right, here we go.
Steady the buffs.
Oh, Ned.
The Patriot by Robert Browning.
Capital.
Yes, well, The Patriot by Robert Browning. It was roses, roses all the way, and myrtle mixed in me path like mad. The house rules seemed to heave and sway.
Excuse me.
I see. Evidently not to Reese's taste.
Nonsense, he's had a bit too much to drink.
I hope he's all right.
It wasn't the drink that upset him. It was the poem, and I know why.
Don't be absurd, George. He wanted some fresh air, that's all.
No. I knew I'd seen that face somewhere before. Though when I saw him last, he wasn't sporting moustaches. By God. Small wonder he couldn't stomach the Patriot. That fellow was once a British officer, and he was court-martialed for cowardice in South Africa.
Mr. Reese, where are you?
I'm here.
Are you all right?
Perfectly. Wanted some fresh air, that's all.
Dr. Kitson's recitation wasn't upsetting you.
Why the devil should it? I beg your pardon. I have something of a headache.
I was worried.
You shouldn't be.
May I ask you something? I have no right to expect an answer, but I must ask you anyway.
What on earth do you mean?
Have you ever seen Dr. Kitson? That Dr. Kitson, before today?
Never. Why?
Have you ever been to South Africa?
Of course I haven't. Why do you wish to know?
It's quite unimportant, and I promise you I shall never trouble you again.
Alice?
Yes?
You've been extraordinarily kind to me since I came to Chael. I'd like you to know that I appreciate it very deeply. More than I can adequately explain.
It's not entirely disinterested.
I beg your pardon?
You're one of the few men I've met since Richard died whom I should like to know a great deal better.
I wish I could...
Will you excuse me? I must get back to the others.
Alice?
I don't care what the fellow may or may not have done. I won't have scandal of this sort about a guest under my roof.
Dash it all, Kitson, you must be mistaken. The man's got nerves of iron. If you'd seen the way he dealt with that train near Kalka.
Near Kalka? If it hadn't been for Mr. Reese, we should both be dead now.
Absolutely. No, no, Kitson, you're barking up quite the wrong tree. Reese may be an odd sort of chap. Deep sort of fellow, I'd say. But when it comes to the push, he's utterly reliable. First rate.
George, you're mistaken. Mr. Reese had no idea what you alleged just now. And if you wish to visit this house ever again, I must insist that you promise never to repeat that abominable canard.
I see. You prefer the silence of a stranger to the testament of an old friend.
Don't be so melodramatic. Anyone can make a mistake, and that's what you've done. But it would be very hurtful if Mr. Reese should hear about it. Now, will you do as I ask?
Oh, it's high time I left. Party's got out of hand.
You began it, you know. We were all enjoying ourselves until you made that extremely unpleasant remark.
Remark? I'm going to bed. Are you coming, Ned?
Oh, rather. If you'll give me a hand up.
Oh, here you are. Oh.
There. Well, I hope we've heard the last of all this. Oh, look here, Kitson. None of us is saying you're a liar. All we're saying is that you must be mistaken. Now, why don't you leave it like that? There's a good fellow.
Good night.
But that's beautiful. Absolutely charming.
I should like you and Alice to have it.
Oh, my dear fellow, we couldn't possibly accept it.
But I insist. It would be ungracious of you to refuse a gift.
Yes, but this samovar's a perfect beauty. You know, I'm terribly grateful.
You've made me very comfortable here this past fortnight. You've shown me every courtesy and consideration. I don't know when I've enjoyed myself more. So please, take it and have done.
It's extremely generous of you, and we shall treasure it.
And use it, I hope.
Alice will go over head when she sees it. In fact, why don't you wrap it up again and give it to her yourself? You deserve to see the delight it'll give her.
Oh, that sort of thing isn't much in my line. You show it to her when she returns.
Where are you off to? What about a drink?
I'll join you later, and thank you.
Thank you, my dear chap.
What the devil's that caterwauling?
Oh, the inexhaustible young Harding about his muscular Christianity again.
With tribal children?
You have no idea. He bribes them with lollipops and illustrated tracts from Genesis.
But what do their parents make of it?
Oh, he bribes them too. Anna's 10 for every child who attends Sunday school. The number of converts he's made is astonishing.
Sound like that would cheer old Reese's heart.
Why Reese in particular? He always strikes me as possessing a particularly cynical mind.
Oh, don't you believe it. He spends the hour before dinner, every evening, with his Bible.
The devil, you say?
Promise you.
I suppose it's hardly surprising. His father's a vicar, after all. Religion clearly runs in the family.
I don't know. Massive contradictions, that chap. Do you know where he was this afternoon?
In Simla Market, buying us that magnificent samovar.
Correct, sir. But did he tell you exactly where he bought it?
Does it matter? It's a beautiful object.
Letty Alice and Mrs. Bellew saw him vanish into the establishment of none other than A.N. Jacob.
What?
A.N. Jacob. Positively no mistake about it.
Heaven's sake, Kitson, don't look so wronged. It's his first visit to the hills. He can't have any idea of the kind of reputation Jacob has.
Well, whatever else may be said about Reese, he's nobody's fool. If he went to see Jacob, he went there for a purpose.
Exactly. To buy this samovar.
Just tell me candidly, after all your years in this district, what the common knowledge is about Jacob.
Common knowledge here, perhaps, to the military and the ICS, but not to chance travellers.
Oh, no one finds his place by chance.
Yes, and I'm stationed in Madras, Laker, 1,200 miles south of here. And even I know of Jacob's reputation. The man deals in espionage.
Come in.
Oh, dear. I hope I'm not disturbing you.
What can I do for you, Mrs. Bellew?
The clasp on one of my trunks is jammed. I was wondering if you could release it for me.
If I...
Oh, I would ask one of the chokidars, but you know how careless they are with things.
I see. Well, I'll take a look at it, but I can't promise anything.
Thank you. I'm sure you'll manage beautifully. Do come through.
There, you see? I simply can't move it.
How did that happen? Was it dropped?
Oh, you know what these people are like. How careless they are.
Which people?
The Indians, Mr. Rees. The Indians.
Consider, Mrs. Bellew, what the Indians are paid to be careful about. What they earn in a week wouldn't keep me in drinks for 2 hours. Now, there. There you are.
But you've been so quick. How can I thank you?
Say thank you, perhaps. Now, if you'll excuse me.
While you're here, could I trespass on your kindness for 2 more minutes?
What is it? I am rather busy at present.
It's your advice I should appreciate. Manly advice.
Oh, yes?
In the matter of what I'm to wear to dinner this evening.
Well, you'd do far better consulting Alice Laker or Mrs. Fairfax.
There. What do you think of this one?
Seems very pretty. Difficult to tell, really.
Then I shall change into it and you can see it properly.
Then I shall wait outside.
No nonsense. There's a screen here.
This is absolutely preposterous.
I do appreciate your patience, you know. I'm afraid I'm one of those ladies who does rely on masculine judgment. There. What do you think?
Good heavens.
Oh, dear. Don't you like it?
Well, it's rather unexpected.
The décolletage, you mean? Oh, it's all the go, I assure you, in London and Paris.
Very possibly. But we are in the Himalayas, Mrs. Bellew. Won't you be chilly?
If I am, I can wear a stole. Well, does it meet with your approval?
I'm not used to anything quite so revealing.
But it pleases you.
Should it be your object to please other men when your husband isn't here?
Oh, would you have me dress dowdily because I'm on my own? You do like it, don't you? You find it attractive?
Provocative would be a more accurate description.
Oh, but that's good. You couldn't have paid me a higher compliment.
This kind of situation could get out of hand.
No. Does a little flirtation matter?
Certainly, when you have a husband in Calcutta.
And I know what he'll be doing, where he'll be going at this time of evening. You must know far better than I do that men separated from their wives have means of assuaging their loneliness.
This isn't a proper conversation for us to be holding.
Why are you so loud?
Disconcerted, perhaps, that you should choose to be so frank. But you're no stranger to this sort of conversation, are you?
The only sin, Mr. Rees, is to be caught.
This is harlot's talk.
Perhaps. But you're fascinated.
I don't believe the lowest drab, whoever followed the drum, would betray her lover as lightly as you're offering to betray your husband.
How dare you?
Adultery is a crime against God and man. If you possess so little confidence, then I advise you to return to Calcutta immediately.
No, you are contemptible!
Never heard this unlikely story, Letty. But, Rees, I gather you had something of an adventure as well in Simla today.
Adventure? Shopping in the mall.
Didn't you visit the mysterious Mr. Jacob?
That what he was called. Antiquarian chap.
In a benevolent mood, I suppose you might call him that. There are other less harmonious reports about A.N. Jacob.
Oh. Because he's a half-caste, or looks like one?
His parentage has nothing to do with it. He's widely regarded as being a spy, for the largest bidder, to be sure, but notably for Russia.
And in certain parts of Germany, William Shakespeare is widely regarded as being of Teutonic origin. And what does that prove?
I'm afraid one can't be too facetious about old Jacob. Fellow has an appalling reputation.
With whom?
Oh, generally.
Oh, come now. What does that really mean? Anyone who trades between Simla and Tashkent can barter news as well as goods. It's been going on for thousands of years.
Know Simla well, do you? On intimate terms with the officers of military intelligence.
Have you personal knowledge of this, Jacob?
Damn it, of course I haven't.
And would you pronounce a medical opinion upon a patient you'd never examined? Well, then, why this fuss about another trader?
For the samovar you bought from him, I could forgive him anything.
Here.
I should imagine that Mr. Rees and Mr. Jacob have a great deal in common, wouldn't you? Both being gentlemen of mystery.
You look for mystery where none exists, Mrs. Bellew.
Oh, I think not.
I hope you aren't intending to embark upon something you will surely regret.
Come, come, this is a dinner party and the conversation's been serious quite long enough. Mrs. Fairfax, what gossip did you pick up in Simla today?
Oh, but I believe I have some excellent gossip for the table in general.
Splendid. Tell us.
How would you define the conduct of a gentleman who attempts, by every means at his disposal, to seduce a married woman whose husband is in no position to come to her assistance?
Aha! There's some scandal you heard today.
Before we answer, Mrs. Bellew, let me counter with a question for you.
Oh, shame.
How would our friends define the conduct of a married woman who sets out to seduce a near stranger at the first opportunity that presents itself?
I say, what kind of game are you two playing?
Playing? Don't keep us in suspense.
What the devil's going on?
You may well ask.
Laker, I advise you to control Mrs. Bellew before she finds herself in litigation.
And whose word will they believe?
Either be quiet or speak up openly.
Look here, old man, that's no way to address an officer's wife.
Mrs. Bellew is a bored and irresponsible young woman with the instincts of a courtesan.
How good
are you? You'll apologize.
How dare you talk like that? By God, Fairfax, I was right about him, and I knew it.
Miss Laker, can you persuade that silly girl to behave herself in adult company?
What's all this about?
2 hours ago, Mr. Reese came to my room and made indecent proposals to me.
You hear it? Laker? Fairfax? All of you? Would a woman with a legitimate and damaging accusation wait 2 hours to bring it? Would she giggle her way through dinner opposite her supposed seducer without a word of complaint? I demand an instant retraction, Mrs. Bellew, or tomorrow you'll be faced with a solicitor's letter, and these unlucky people will be obliged to testify against you.
The most sensible course is for all of us to forget this recent conversation and never refer to it again. Otherwise, Mrs. Bellew, I shall have to ask you to leave this hotel.
What did you say? I leave the hotel.
You take his word against this lady.
I shall discuss it no further. And anyone wishing to do so may leave the hotel at once.
Mr. Laker, you disappoint me.
And you disappoint me. You distress me greatly.
Thank you, Laker.
Just a minute. Do you realize who you're protecting?
Don't be foolish, George.
No, I'll not stand by and see an honest woman's reputation sullied by a renegade.
Have you all gone mad?
Let me ask him this. Is Alan Reese the name you were born with?
What is my name to you?
Aren't you known in the Bombay Residency as Jaleel Brenton Carey?
What? Now, don't be absurd, Kitson.
Yet our friend keeps his own counsel.
Kitson, I want you to leave. And I don't want to see you here again.
Damn it, Reese. Tell him it's not true.
Seal, escort Dr. Kitson to his carriage.
Not before we've thrashed this out.
Am I to use force?
Let him deny it first.
Why don't you clear off?
Would someone please tell me what this awfulness is about?
Mrs. Fairfax, Mrs. Bellew, you both come with me.
Oh, let them stay. It doesn't matter.
Do you realize what he's calling you?
He claims I'm a serving officer with the British Army in India. Well, so are you, Fairfax. And so is the husband of that frivolous young woman.
Stop it, all of you.
You've been a just man this evening, Laker. I won't reward you with lies. Suppose my name is Carey. What then?
What then? What then? Cashiered for cowardice in the field. The man who almost caused a war between England and France. And you ask, what then? You aren't wanted here. You aren't wanted anywhere on the face of the earth. Get out before you tempt me to injure you.
Seal, show Dr. Kitson out.
Let me finish the story. Publicly acquitted. A queen's pardon. Gazetted captain. And a serving officer since that time.
If you're so proud of being Carey, why masquerade as Reese?
To avoid scenes like this, with oafs like you. If you want the facts, go to the Adjutant General in England.
I was there. I knew I'd seen you in South Africa. I was at Luntman's Drift when they brought his body back.
No one denies he died. Least of all, myself. But his death was a misadventure, and the world accepted it as such.
Not the British Army. If you were innocent, why hasn't one of your brother officers spoken a word to you for 6 years?
Lieutenant Carey, sir.
Yes, trooper, what is it?
Colonel Harrison presents his compliments, sir. And would you report to him as soon as possible?
Ah, Carey, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
We have a problem.
Sir?
In the person of the Prince Imperial.
Louis Napoleon?
The young beggars in South Africa.
Well, what's he doing here? It's preposterous.
That's what we've all been saying from Lord Chelmsford downwards. I gather the Prince was bored with Woolwich, and when he heard we were on the move in Natal, he decided to come to the sharp end. The French are appalled, but the Prince wooed Queen Victoria. He spoke to Mr. Disraeli, who had a word of the Duke of Cambridge, who apologized to Chelmsford and said, that was that. And out the boy came. He's in Pretoria at the moment, but he's anxious to accompany the punitive expedition into Zululand.
As a serving officer?
Well, absolutely not. As an observer only. The French are being sufficiently touchy about his presence with the field force as it is. However, Lord Chelmsford has seen fit to send the young man to us for a while, on the express condition that he's not allowed anywhere near an area of hazard. So, someone's going to have to hold his little French hand.
Someone?
Commandant Bettington, in fact, and yourself. Well, you speak the lingo, Carey, after all.
Very good, sir.
It's far from good. The Prince couldn't have arrived at a more inconvenient time. Clearly, the Prince will have to come with us, but we must ensure he's kept out of harm's way. However much he yearns for glory. Damn it, he's the last of his line. If anything should happen to him, the Napoleonic dynasty is finished. And there's still sufficient of a royalist faction in France to create the most appalling havoc should he die whilst he's on a British campaign. Nevertheless, it's evidently Her Majesty's personal wish that the boy should be here, so we shall have to make the best of an impossible situation.
I understand that the flying column is to make camp by the Ijojosi, Colonel Harrison.
In 2 days' time, Your Highness, yes.
Then may I have your permission to accompany the scouting patrol tomorrow?
Carey, you've covered most of that terrain already. What do you think?
Well, the ridge between the Tombegela and the Ijojosi has been reported clear of Zulus, sir. In any event, the Prince would certainly be within sight of the 2nd Division and the flying column lagers. And there'll be at least half a dozen vedettes crossing the entire area during the course of the day. If you like, I can accompany His Highness.
Now look, Prince Louis. If you go off junketing tomorrow with this officer, you must take a proper escort. A proper escort. Understood?
Of course, sir. Commandant Beddington's troopers?
Half a dozen, yes. The same number from the Edendale contingent. They're locals. They can winkle out your Zulu at half a mile.
Very good, sir.
You're off, then?
Yes, sir.
But there's only 6 troopers and a guide here. Where are the Edendale men?
Oh, only a few miles in the rear, Colonel. They should overtake us before noon.
See that they do. Taking your dog with you?
Yes, he likes the exercise.
Dog on patrol. Well, off you go, then. And Highness.
Sir?
Look after yourself. And don't get shot.
Oh, Carey will take very good care that nothing happens to me. Halt!
What is it, sir?
Down there. That car looks deserted. It might make a suitable site for the flying column encampment tomorrow. I think we should investigate it.
If we leave the ridge and go down there, we shall be out of sight of Wood's vedettes.
But there is no danger. You can see for yourself, Carey. There is no sign of life whatsoever.
Apart from the dogs, perhaps. But once we're down there, we shall have restricted visibility. I mean, look at that tambuti grass. It surrounds the kraal on 3 sides. I don't think this is the spot for us. But a very small party, and we should offer a tempting target.
For whom? My dear Carey, for whom? We have not seen a single Zulu all morning. Now, they'll be lagering well beyond the Ijojosi. Anyway, I want some coffee. We can soon have a fire going in that cattle bin.
Corporal Grubb, off-saddle the horses and knee-halter them. Litok, you and Abel might get a fire going. Use some of that thatch. The place is obviously abandoned.
Very good, sir.
Rogers and Willis can fetch some water from the river. Enough for the horses, if you please.
Understood, sir.
Hello? What's this?
Sugar cane, sir. Yes. It's been chewed fairly recently.
See if the guide can tell us how recently.
Oh, you're being overcautious. We had the place in sight the entire 3 hours it took us to come down from the ridge. And we've seen no activity whatsoever.
Look at these ashes, sir. The guide says the fire must have been lit about dawn today.
All right, Corporal. I'm not happy about this sight, Your Highness. I think we should move off at once.
But we have only just arrived. And it's a convenient place to finish the sketches.
If you insist. But I'm not at all happy.
Well, then, I insist.
Lieutenant Carey, sir.
What is it?
The guide says he spotted the Zulu on that rise yonder, sir.
Just the one?
So he says, sir.
There could be more behind. Saddle up at once.
Sir. All right, lads. Saddle up. Come on, quick if you like.
You suppose we're in for a little excitement, Carey?
I hope not. We're much too lightly armed. Cochran, tighten that girth.
Sir.
And all of you, check your carbines.
All saddled and ready, sir. Carbines loaded.
Good. Prepare to mount.
Hey, what was that?
Mount and ride! Waste more time, lads.
Bear to the left! Across the ravine!
Dépêchez-vous, s'il vous plaît! Maltraitez!
Where's the Prince Imperial, for God's sake?
Here's his horse, sir. Here's Percy. The Prince came off about 100 yards back, sir.
Came off? He's the best horseman in the army.
He was never in the saddle, sir. Percy bolted before the Prince could mount, and he was left hanging by the holster, sir. The strap must have snapped, and he fell underneath.
Fell?
Underneath, sir. And I think Percy trampled his arm. My own horse was all out, and I didn't see any more.
Abel's hit in the back, sir, and came off here to crawl.
What about Rogers and the guide?
Well, the Zulu's got Rogers, sir, before he could mount.
And the guide just disappeared. Don't know where he went.
We can't see the crowd from here. What are our weapons?
I lost my carbine, sir, in the dash.
Willis, Latoc, Cochran, you have yours?
Oh, yes, sir.
Louis with you.
And I have my revolver and the sword. This is madness. How many would we say were in the ambush party?
About 40, sir.
Or 50, sir, I'd say.
I'd have guessed over 40. And most of them have muskets and assegais.
Yes, sir.
If we mount a search now, we're outgunned very heavily. I'm afraid, I'm desperately afraid, that we must assume our companions are dead.
The court is of opinion that Lieutenant Carey did not understand the position in which he stood to the prince, and, in consequence, failed to estimate the responsibility which fell to his lot. Secondly, the court is of opinion that Lieutenant Carey is much to blame in having proceeded on duty with any part of the escort. Thirdly, the court is of opinion that the selection of the kraal where the halt was made, surrounded as it was by cover for the enemy, showed a lamentable want of military prudence. Fourthly, the court deeply regrets that no effort was made to rally the escort and show a front to the enemy, whereby the possibility of aiding those who had failed to make good their retreat might have been ascertained. Lieutenant Jaleel Brenton Carey, this court-martial finds you guilty of misbehavior in the face of the enemy.
I was there. I was at Luntman's Drift when they brought Prince Louis's body back. 17 assegai wounds, Carey. And you escaped scot-free.
I led them to his body the following day. Do you imagine I shall forget it as long as I live? But if I had returned immediately, with 5 men only, we should all have been slaughtered. And to what purpose? I had a duty to the living greater than my duty to the dead.
Chelmsford thought otherwise. Chelmsford cashiered you and sent you back to England.
Lord Chelmsford also stated at the court-martial that I was not deficient in personal bravery. He had no wish to make me the scapegoat for a national catastrophe, which is what the court-martial had attempted. And I was exonerated by the British public and the British press. The adjutant-general himself ruled that the charge against me was not sustained by the evidence. Her Majesty did not confirm its proceedings, and I was relieved of all consequences of the trial. My captaincy was ratified, and I returned to my regiment.
Which has disowned you from that day to this. Good God, you've been ostracized for 6 years. Oh, the army knows how to deal with its own.
You call that hideous silence just and honorable? 6 years of hatred and contempt?
You recognize that you're morally culpable, or you'd never have come here under an assumed name. Is that the action of an innocent man?
I crave normality. A few weeks passed in a society where I could be allowed to forget Louis Napoleon and the 6 years of hate that have followed his death. Here, at last, I was treated as a human being and not some outrageous spectacle.
Congratulations, Kitson, on restoring the natural balance.
My dear Alice, my dear Laker, this has been a sorry way to have your kindness repaid. However, once accused by Kitson, I had no option but to see the whole wretched story through. Thank you for not taking Mrs. Bellew's allegations seriously. She is a foolish young woman, and I hope that this affair will have brought her to her senses, for a season or two at least. Clearly, I can no longer remain under your roof. I have enclosed sufficient money to pay for my full stay here, so that should you be unable to fill my unexpected vacancy, you shall not be the losers. Thank you again. And may God bless you both. Yours sincerely, Jaleel Brenton Carey, Captain.
He's insufferable. He can't be driven away like this.
Kitson has a lot to answer for. But how do you hope to find Carey? He could be anywhere.
We have the address of that club in Bombay from where he made his reservation. I shall inquire there first.
It's 1,000 miles away, Alice. It could take weeks.
In a continent of 300 million people, we're his only friends. Who knows what he might have decided if George's viciousness hadn't driven him to desperation.
Be very careful, darling, and think before you act. Are you in love with him or with his predicament?
I don't know. I don't know. All I know is that after 6 years of cruelty and neglect, he began to trust us. Aloof and difficult though he was, he made overtures of friendship, of affection even, because you showed him a normal civility, and I betrayed some kind of tenderness. How can I know what might have happened if this horror hadn't been revived by George Kitson? But unless I see him again and talk to him without all these barbaric reservations that our society insists on imposing, I shall never know whether I love him or pity him or need him.
I'm sorry, ma'am, but you must be mistaken. Captain Carey is not a member of this club, nor of any other club in Bombay, to the best of my knowledge.
But you must know where his lines are. In which cantonment he's to be found. This is the officers' club, surely.
We know nothing of Captain Carey here.
You wish to know nothing.
Thousands of officers pass through here every year. Can I be expected to recollect details of every one, ma'am?
But you know of Captain Carey.
You'd better inquire of the military attaché at the residence.
You've come the deuce of a way, Miss Laker. May I offer you some refreshment?
All I require, sir, is the address of Captain Carey.
Carey? Yes. Do you see, Carey don't live within the cantonment.
He's a hiring of sorts, some kind of place on Malabar Hill, among the Parsees, I shouldn't wonder.
Can you be more specific than that?
Would you think me frightfully odd if I asked what the nature of your interest in Captain Carey might be?
I'm a friend of his, and I wish to visit him.
A friend? The deuce, you say?
Please, kindly, Mam Saab, do not enter the house.
I've come 1,000 miles with the express intention of seeing Captain Carey, and I shan't be put off now. So will you please announce me to your master?
Carey Bahadur is very ill, Mam Saab. I think it is the cholera.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. I no longer greatly care.
How can this be? You were one of the fittest men I've ever known, and look at you now.
I can't entirely recall by what means I returned to Bombay. There were dark bungalows and travelers' tents. A camel caravan and many, many villages. Alice, I've eaten local food and I've drunk local water. Now it's having its effect.
You're dying because you want to die, not because you have to.
There's an end to running.
Because you believed there was nothing else to live for. But there is. I can get you well. We can go to the hills. Assam, I have a little money.
Oh, how could I live with you? I have a wife and 2 children.
Then where is your wife now?
How could I expect her to endure 6 years of daily ignominy?
Then effectively she is no longer your wife.
We have not been put asunder.
You are innocent. And at this moment you are also critically ill in an alien country. Why is your wife not here at your side? But I am here. Oh, I don't care what you've been. I know what you are and might become. First, get well. Then resign your commission as you would wish to, honorably, in your own time. Then perhaps we can begin to plan the kind of life that you owe yourself.
Mem Saab! Mem Saab! Mem Saab, quickly!
Curran, what is it?
Oh, Mem Saab, quickly. Carey Bahadur is very ill.
I'm coming. Purun-Lal, stop wringing your hands and listen to me.
Haji.
Now, go to the Wellington Lines and fetch Surgeon Major Nichols. Huh? Major Nichols, you understand? Dr. Saab Nichols. Tell him it's urgent.
The man has cholera. He should be in isolation.
He's been in isolation for 6 years, Major. You should know that better than I.
Why did you choose this filthy place in which to live? Swarming with bugs and cockroaches.
Because there was nowhere for him amongst his own kind. Now, will you please attend to him? He's a serving officer and has a right to your help.
Nothing I can do, ma'am. He's dehydrated beyond belief. Kidneys are damaged irreparably.
You're closing the account just like that.
What's that?
Will you wait a moment outside? I want to speak to Captain Carey.
Look, it's useless and dangerous. The man's dying and he's babbling. It makes no sense at all.
Please wait outside. It's Alice, my dear.
Poor boy. I liked him very much. So good-natured. What a horseman. To see him riding the plains at dawn. Oh, yes. Yes. We made plans.
Corporal? Corporal Grubb? Why did the holster strap ache?
Please talk to me, Carey.
I am not deficient in personal bravery.
Darling, tell them. There, little Edie. Yes. Those were his words. I am not the fish.
Oh, dear God. Your master is dead, Purun-Law.
Oh. Go on, Hattie. Go on, it wouldn't be long. Well, ma'am, the orderlies will be here sometime after 9 to collect the body. This place will have to be disinfected.
Where will the captain be buried?
No idea. It's up to the commanding officer.
It means nothing to you, does it?
Now, look here, ma'am. I've heard a little bit about you. I think I don't sympathize with you. Come all this way, live in this squalor. To what purpose? A fine young woman reduced to this expediency? And for what?
Is that your obituary? For an officer who gave 20 years of his life to the Empire?
Forgive me, ma'am, but it's no use mincing words. The world knows what Carey was. An embarrassment and a disgrace to his profession and his country. He should have taken the manly way out 6 years ago.
I shall remember you and what you have said. And I hope that when you die, one of your fellow countrymen will not be there to say the same of you.
Been listening to The Hideous Silence by Michael Robson, with Roger Service as Alan Rees, Pamela Perry as Alice Laker, and Tim Sutcliffe as Gus Laker. Tony Wood played Dr. Kitson, Margaret Milner-Smythe, Flora Bellew, Terrick Fitzhugh, Captain Fairfax, and Gillian Lomberg, Letty Fairfax. Others in the cast were Frank Graham, Peter Batchelor, Tommy Reed, John Kingley, Philip Armitage, Brian Charteris, and Jim Williams. Dramatic control was by Phyllis Stunder, and special effects by Yanni Salier. The Hideous Silence was produced in our Durban studios for the Summer Radio Play Festival by Don Ridgway. Mm-hmm.